And with that, we are going to continue down our agenda to item 15, Fish Production Development Plan Update. Welcome.
Hello. It's good to see you again.
Yes, you as well.
I guess while we're waiting, so I'm Mike Barnes, the production administrator
for Hattrick.
Well,
have you put your mic on real quick? Oh. Come on, Mike. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. I'm Mike Barnes, the production administrator, Hattrick production administrator. And I know that Hattrick presentations, particularly when they get into capital costs and maintenance and repair, they can get dry very quickly. And I can assure you, this is not going to be one of those presentations. And if it is, I really would like you to tell me afterwards. So, with that, I do have some specific objectives with this talk. The first is I want to inform you about current hatchery operations, give you a little historical background, and also let you know where we're going. I invite you to really scrutinize what we're doing. Ask me questions, you know, later, whatever, come visit us, and really, I want to get your support for what we're doing to help us move forward. And lastly, I want you guys to be impressed. When you see some of the amazing things that hatchery staff, and I emphasize it's a staff, I'm not doing anything, it's the people that I'm privileged to supervise and lead, are doing really unprecedented things, and I'm not exaggerating, I don't use that word lightly. So with that, I want you to understand, first of all, what our hatchery goal is. And for a long time, I said our goal was to maximize angler satisfaction. And then I realized that's really not our goal. I mean, angler satisfaction is okay, but we want to get people excited. And more than that, we want them to be enthusiastic. With what we're doing in the hatcheries, we want people to have that wow factor when they take their kids to an urban fishery or they catch a limit of walleyes and make memories that last them forever and make them want to continue doing what they're doing. And we do that by emphasizing post-stocking survival. So it really doesn't matter how many fish we grow and produce if they don't survive after they're stocked or if they're not used by our anglers. So there are specialized techniques. Maybe we add some environmental enrichment, some structure or habitat during hatchery rearing, which really has some benefits. That's just one example. Maybe we limit human interaction to keep them as wild as can be. And then we also focus on fish quality. Perhaps we have this angler catching this kind of drab rainbow trout, not really excited. We really strive for something that looks more natural and makes people happy. Again, making people enthusiastic about what we're doing. That's our focus, and we really are focused on customers. Just a brief overview of the hatchery system. Claycorn Springs State Fish Hatchery in Rapid City is the oldest hatchery built in 1928. There was a substantial remodel in 2007. That hatchery traditionally has been the largest cold water trout and salmon producer in the state. Recently, within the past few years, we've added some new technologies, so Claycorn is now hatching and growing walleyes, largemouth bass, bluegills, muskies, that's all happening there, and I'll show you some pictures in a little bit about that. McNinney State Fish Hatchery outside of Spearfish was built in 1953. It is probably the simplest of the hatcheries, relying on artesian flows out of the ground, not a lot of pumps for the trout and salmon production, and we have done some improvements there and are growing different species as well. And then lastly, Blue Dog Hatchery in 1980 was built in 1982 up by Wabe, and it is, and historically has always been the largest walleye producer with all of the ponds, growing primarily walleyes and ponds, but other species as well. I can't remember, I don't know, 20 plus different kinds of species grown there over the years. The thing to, I guess, to look at with the ages, is to look at the ages of all these facilities, and they are getting older. And that presents some unique challenges that we try to address. And that was one of the leading impetuses in creating the hatchery plan in 2021, where And I tried to summarize this real simply, but really what we got tasked with in 2021 was grow more fish, grow them bigger, do it more efficiently. So we're not going to get more money or anything, just figure out ways to do things better, and do it more economically in the long term, so that we don't have long-term high capital costs for maintenance and repair. That was the challenge. Some things have changed since then, and I will show you what we have accomplished, but some major changes occurred, and that is we got new information that changed some of that plan. Costs increased dramatically, primarily because of inflation and a nationwide binge in hatchery building. And then the fisheries manager's request changed as well, an increase. And as hatcheries, you know, our ultimate customer is the angler of South Dakota, but our intermediate customer is the fisheries managers. They request the fish that we produce, and they're the ones that make the decisions on where they go. So new information. In the 2021 plan, one of the ideas or one of the proposals was to build the small hatchery at the Fort Pier office outside of town. We subsequently learned that the infrastructure, particularly the wastewater, the sewer lines, couldn't handle the volume of water that we were looking at, and that has been shelved. That just proved too expensive, too big a hurdle to overcome. One of the coolest things is we were looking at building a hatchery on campus at SDSU. I spent a lot of energy looking at that, making plans, and then subsequently realized that was going to be prohibitively expensive. It couldn't happen. So that project has been shelved as well. And then expectations changed. So on the left side, you can see all of the different species, not all, but most of the different species and sizes that we are requested to produce. The 2021 plan was based on 2019 requests, but those have increased in 2023. So 2019, we were asked to grow 1.2 million walleye juveniles, small little fingerling size. In 2023, that request went up to 6 million, a tremendous challenge. The pounds of salmonids. The number of fish can fluctuate, but you can't really fluctuate based on pounds. So 2019 hatcheries were asked to produce 150,000 pounds. 2023, that doubled. And that has an impact on long-term plans. Surprisingly, muskie numbers went down, but the caveat there is those fish are now requested at twice the size they were previously. So bigger, a lot longer in the hatchery. Some of the most important things is we went from requesting zero catchable size largemouth bass to 10,000 in 2023. And that is driven by our urban and community fisheries, getting fish to the people, families and kids in urban areas, huge driver in hatchery, changes in hatchery operations. I threw this in, the juvenile bass went from zero to 200,000. That was because of winter kill, and that is one of the challenges of hatchery planning is, depending on Mother Nature, we might get a huge request one year and then not much the next. Catchable bluegills, again, substantial increase from what we were planning in 2019. And then channel catfish, again, those catfish are going into urban and community fisheries. That's driving a lot of this. Then, as a fun exercise, we asked the fisheries managers, look ahead to 2029. What do you expect as far as where do you think hatchery stocking requests are going to be? All of those numbers increase. And so the question is, how are we going to do this? Because that's our mission. So we're going to do it based on what we have done previously. And what we've learned since the last plan is that for us to be able to do what we want to do, we have to do it ourselves to a large degree. And we're doing that using recirculating aquaculture systems, which is relatively new technology, RAS for short, and that involves, it's kind of complex and takes a lot of time, but we are able to do things we never thought before possible. This is just a schematic of a typical RAS system, lots going on, lots of filters to remove solids and waste products, but the important thing to remember is that water is recirculated and reused, which means it becomes economical to heat the water. So it's not just getting used in discharge. So if we can heat it, we can start growing fish we've never been able to grow before at sizes and in time frames that's never happened. And it's complex. All of this material has to be ordered, and this is all happening by hatchery staff. And that's just for the system you saw on the other page, except for that's not all. We have to order all of this stuff as well. So that's one system, a very simple system. And again, that's all done by Hatchery staff. And amongst all of their other duties, they are getting this done. Lots and lots of work. So since the 2021 plan, we have installed 5 systems at Claycorn Hatchery in Rapid City. Some of you actually visited that a few years back, so you've seen that. So we're up at 5 systems. We have 3 more under construction. The one thing that I learned, we all learned, is it's really easy to construct RAS systems when you don't have to run any. But as soon as you start operating them, Hatchery staff goes down and the time to complete additional systems takes a little longer. So those are going to get completed within the next few years, and then we'll have a total of 8 systems at Claycorn. McNinney, we essentially took an old post frame. This is the, again, McNinney's the simplest, but the challenge here was we needed some systems quickly. So the staff insulated a post frame building and got this together in about really 6 months. And it's working. We have one little system with 4 tanks, but we also, because we needed it, came up with a modular system that we can use to grow little largemouth bass and incubate walleye eggs as needed. And we can move it out. The plan is to move it out and move it in as needed. Blue Dog Hatchery, we have one system in operation up there as well with additional systems planned. So what have we done to put this in perspective? Just some pictures. This is a 1-year-old bluegill grown at Claycorn Springs. That fish in the wild would take us 8 to 9 years to grow. So just incredible. This is the standard stocking size for muskies. That's a 1-year-old muskie. This is a fish, this photo was just taken a few months ago at Blue Dog Hatchery. That's a 10.5-inch largemouth bass in 8 months. Again, 4 urban and community fisheries. That's what the managers request, and we're going to do it. Just, I don't want to say for fun, but we got told it couldn't be done, so Claycorn Hatchery staff actually grew some walleyes in a year to over 14 inches in the hatchery system. And those fish were stocked into Sheridan Lake, where there was an immediate response, of course, by our anglers. Graphically, if we look at it, this is walleye production in RAS. Again, it's not all about urban and community fisheries. We also have a huge need for walleyes. So on the upper axis, that's pounds of walleyes produced a year by year. We really got started into growing these juvenile walleyes in 2022, and the first year, it was a few hundred pounds. 2023, that went up to a little less than 4,000. 2024, now we're above 4,000 pounds, and the projection is this year we're going to be close to 8,000 pounds. To put that in perspective, historically, the maximum poundage we were ever able to produce of walleyes before RAS was about 1,500 pounds. So we are producing more, we're producing them bigger. That was the challenge. If we look at it as far as return on investment, I will tell you if we grew at McNinney Hatchery in that small system, which cost us less than $100,000 to construct, if we only grew largemouth bass based on current market rates, if we could buy those fish, the ones that are for sale, we will have paid for that system in less than a year based on that production. Big picture, all of the RAS we have done over the past few years, we spent about $2.5 million primarily on equipment, but also building a building. If we would have hired a contractor and if we would have had an engineer design all this, again, this is based on engineering estimates, not just Mike estimates. We have produced facilities. We, as in the staff, again, I'm privileged to supervise and lead, that are worth $25 million. I mean, it is a tremendous story, tremendous success story, I think, of what we're doing. And hopefully not a boring hatchery administration talk. So, what else have we done? We're not letting long-term maintenance needs go ignored. So this past year, we did spend about $450,000 replacing some plumbing at McNinney Hatchery and valves that definitely needed to be replaced. So we're not letting everything else slide. The RAS stuff is in addition to what we're doing to keep these facilities operational. 2024, we received a new challenge, and that was we would consistently meet fisheries managers' requests by 2029. Huge challenge. How are we going to do that? Again, I'm going to go back to, we need to finish the RAS systems at Claiborne, and that's going to happen. A change from the original plan is the next thing we need to do is focus on Blue Dog, and after that, we're going to focus more on Blue Dog, and after that, we're going to focus more on Blue Dog. We have that existing facility, and we are going to maximize its use with its current production capabilities as well as expand into RAS. Just to give you a few examples, the water at Blue Dog is high in iron. We have some old iron filters. Those need to be replaced in order for us to grow the poundage of trout and salmon that we want to grow there. We're going to repurpose an existing liquid oxygen tank that we upsized at Claiborne Hatchery, saving us half the cost if we bought new. That's going to move to Blue Dog. And again, the idea is to take the existing infrastructure. These are tanks containing salmon right now, but we don't have enough water to run all of those tanks at the same time with filtered water, upsize the filters, use all of that, so that we can, out of Blue Dogs, meet all of the East River trout and salmon, trout stocking needs particularly, which we can't do now. Long term, that will save us in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $60,000 that we spend every year trucking fish from the western hatcheries to the urban areas in eastern South Dakota. So there's going to be some payback there. We have already purchased some specialized tanks. These are special larval tanks used for growing walleyes. We just need space at Blue Dog to place them. So we're going to take a building that really isn't used for its intended purpose, and we're going to convert that into a RAS building at Blue Dog. Hope to get started on that this year, and that's where the existing RAS, little RAS system is actually located. We want to build a bigger building at Blue Dog eventually. And that would house multiple RAS systems as well as other things needed at the hatchery. That's what we're looking. That's going to be a big expenditure in the coming years, but it will serve the long-term needs for both walleye production primarily as well as community and urban fisheries. So, what else is next? We're going to maximize our collaborations. Right now, we are working with Lake Area Technical College. They have a small RAS system there that they're growing channel catfish for us. We're going to help them expand their systems. Not only are they growing fish for us, but they are providing us with interns and a workforce, a ready workforce in this RAS stuff. This is complex, and we need a specialized set of skills to run them. We also have Western Dakota Tech growing bluegills for us right now. And they have systems there as well, and we provide technical support and fish, and again, working with them. And I would be remiss, the other part of collaborations that are essential to our success that goes on behind the scenes is we rely a lot on our other state partners and the Fish and Wildlife Service to a certain degree, but definitely other states, to provide us products that we can't grow easily ourselves, and both eggs and fish. And to give you some idea of the scope, these are the some of the states we've interacted with over the past 3 or 4 years. And we provide them products when we have it available. It is just a tremendous resource for all of the states. And it is. It's all built on relationships, and states help each other out. So I want to leave you with some idea of how far we have actually come over the past few years. And I'm going to go back to 2010, because we had a major change in 2010. And what I like to say is that's really when we started on the yellow brick road to the Emerald City of hatchery operations. And when I bring up this next slide and we go through it, if you are not as impressed as I am with hatchery staff, what they have done, I have done, I have failed communicating properly. So, simple graph, not to scale. We're going to go 2010 to 2024. That's the last year I have data. So, full-time employees in the hatchery system. 2010, we had 17. 2024, we have 12. Now, I have an asterisk because we are trying to get two more people hired in 2025. The other part of that asterisk is we hire a lot of interns. A lot of interns year-round. And that's really the staffing model that is allowing us to do what we do with so few permanent staff. So how does that equate, though, and actually return to anglers? Have we seen a decline in production? I will let you be the judge. So poundage of trout and salmon. In 2010, we had 110,000 pounds, 250,000 pounds in 2024. If we look at the number of walleye juveniles, these little fingerlings going out, 2.2 million in 2010. Last year, over 6 million. And then, so that's more fish. Bigger fish, poundage-wise, 2010, 1,100 pounds. Jump ahead to 2024, that poundage has increased almost sixfold. We look at RAS production. Can I click this? RAS production, 2020 was zero. Last year, almost 8,400 pounds. With the current equipment that we have already, that we are going to complete, that projection is in about 3 years, that could be as high as 30,000 to 40,000 pounds, which means we have essentially created a brand new hatchery over the course of a few years. How are we able to do this all? It's interns, but there's another big piece of the puzzle that I would be remiss not to show you, and that is the hatchery culture is built on innovation, controlled experimentation, and documentation. So if we look at the number of scientific journal articles published, including in engineering journals, there were four in 2010, 17 last year. And I do not know of any other state hatchery system that comes anywhere close to that. And this is with a staff of 12. Just incredible. So, again, how far have we come? That's not really, I think, the important thing to ask. The important thing is how much we get to do yet. There is still so much to be done, and with the support of our administrators, and I'm not just, I mean, I'm going to do it anyway, Kevin Roebling, Tom Kirschenman, John Locke, Chad Switzer, all of those are so integral to our success because they are so supportive. I am living in a dream time of hatchery operations to have such supportive administrators providing us with the funding and just the encouragement to get done what we get done. And we are doing unprecedented things. And with that, I am done.
Very good. And that was very impressive.
So,
exciting.
Yes. Any questions from the commission? Comments?
You don't enjoy your job here.
I enjoy the people I work with that are actually doing the work. That's, yeah, it's just a real privilege to get up here and represent them to you all.
Mike, I do have a question for you. You know, we talked about, you brought up the slide 2019, and from there we would see an increase in the request for more fish and the size of fish. What do you think created that demand?
I think hatcheries did. Because we are doing things that fisheries managers never thought would be possible. Before RAS came along, the idea of requesting a 10-inch largemouth bass every year just never existed. The idea of stocking an 18-inch muskie after a year of RAS rearing, which, by the way, there have been studies that show the post-stocking survival of those fish is just dramatic compared to what we used to do by stocking fish just in the fall, because that's all we could do. So it's the technology is providing opportunities that fisheries managers never knew existed, and they are responding by requesting more fish. And in some ways, we're kind of our own enemies. It's a positive feedback loop. The more fish we produce, the more they request, the more we produce. It just goes round and round and round. But there of course, there's limits, and we reach those every year, and we compensate. But it's just an exciting time. So.
Very good. One more question before I give it to Commissioner Locken. When we look at McNinney, built in 1953, and some of the maintenance updates that were done, have there been conversations about what more might need to be done to that aging infrastructure?
We have been very, very good over the years of addressing infrastructure needs before they become too problematic. We do know that in a few years, 5 years, we're going to have to replace the aeration tower, the degassing tower. That's coming up. I mean, that's probably going to be a $500,000 or $600,000 repair. But we're doing it not as huge projects. My personal goal is, I never want the hatchery system to ever have to issue bonds again. If we are doing our jobs, and with the support of higher administration saying, yes, you get $500,000 this year, let's take care of some of these long-term problems, we're in actually pretty good shape. Cleghorn Hatchery, you know, that remodel was 20 years ago. We're starting to see some costs that are going to have to be incurred there. And the challenge is, let's take care of them when they come instead of putting it off, and all of a sudden we have a $20 million bill that we have to bond for. That's not the way I want to do business.
Very good. Commissioner Locken?
Yeah, just to set the record straight, when I got on the commission, my first visit was to the Blue Dog Hatchery, and I was impressed with the work they were doing with the facility they had. It's gotten old and probably needs some updates. And just wondering, how big a building are you considering putting at Blue Dog, with the RAS in?
As big as we can afford. You know, bigger is always better. We are in the process of getting a consulting engineer on board to help us answer some of the questions at Blue Dog, like how big do the iron filters need to be? Can we do other things? And if we lay out, this is, you know, what we're thinking as far as production needs, and we have some other needs at Blue Dog, what size of building can we fit in that space? If that's actually a good spot to build this. I wish I was an engineer, but I'm not, so I have great plans, and then engineering tells me actually what's realistic and what we can do. So,
one more question. Yeah. Do you notice feed efficiency on the RAS systems? More efficient use of the feed?
So, complex question. That is the feeds for a lot of the fish that are being grown now in RAS. So, historically, catfish, trout feeds, all of the traditional hatchery fish, those are well established. Their nutritional needs and how we get them to eat the feed attractants, those kinds of things. With walleyes, bass, there's still a lot to learn as far as what's the optimal diet. In an ideal world, and we do see this with a number of species, ideally we would like to be able to feed them a little more than a pound, say 1.1 pounds, and they will grow about a pound. So that's our ideal world. Sometimes it's even more than that, and we'll just kind of throw the scientific puzzle out. We will grow small fish and we'll feed them a pound, and they will grow a pound and a half. Or we have mutant fish. I told Kevin the story this morning. We got some catfish in that we start from Kansas last fall that were about 10 inches. And I was, just a few days ago, one of those fish is already 8 pounds after about 8 months in a RAS system. So we're still learning a lot about what these systems will do and how best to use them. And on my end, everything we learn is going to be written down, published, and we're going to document it so we can learn from it in the future as well as share it with all of our surrounding states.
Thank you.
Additional comments? Before I do let you go, Mike, I do want to say I'm consistently amazed and applaud the efforts, not just from the fisheries staff, but all of the department when they are told duties as assigned and they build things and do all of these contractual work. It saves the department money and it trickles down to the user. And so I applaud the efforts of all of that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Sorry, Commissioner, go ahead.
Yes.
Madam Chair, this is Commissioner White. Say in the past, I know that we've had some outside enthusiasts that have been very interested in encouraging this operation that these gentlemen are expressing doing. Is it possible that they would consider partnering with the expansion on this to even enhance it to a greater degree if they knew that they could make a difference in doing this a little bigger than what even that we're looking at?
Do you want to answer that, Secretary Roblin, or do you want me to?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for the question. Kevin Roblin here, Secretary of Game Fish and Parks. Yes, absolutely. We are going to be hopefully embarking on a capital campaign to raise some funds for exactly what we're talking about here very soon. probably not in the next few months. We're still putting a lot of numbers to paper, getting some plans and ideas in place before we pursue that. But we are going to need some partners here. There is no doubt this is going to be a collaborative project, with both the private sector and the public sector, because what we are doing here is benefiting municipalities, urban areas. We're benefiting tourism. We're benefiting just a lot of different things when it comes to people pursuing fish and having the opportunity to angle and catch fish. So, yes, those are in the works, and we'll talk about that more in a few months.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. One last comment I just want to make, and staff in the room and staff listening in, hear me talk about never settle for average when you're on Team GF&P, and this is exactly what I'm referring to. This team is never settling for average. They're always looking for that next thing. They're always hungry for success, and they're just raising the bar time and time again, and I would just want to thank them from the bottom of my heart and from everybody in the department. This is excellent. This is inspiring. Keep up the good work.
Good. Thanks, Mike. And with that, it does move us a little